Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, this is the Nature Boy Ric Flair 16 times. Your World Heavyweight Champion and the host of Woo Nation, along with my co-host, and I mean the legendary. I have been in four cities in the last two weekends, and literally the legendary Conrad Thompson, second wealthiest man, youngest billionaire in Alabama, who drives a $347,000 Rolls Royce in Huntsville, Alabama. Half the people there don't know what it is. He's got an 11,000 square foot home on a cliff.
Oh my God.
I told someone the other day, he's got a wine cellar you can park a car in. What more could you want in life? Somebody said, what does Conrad drink? And I said, there aren't enough bottles of Crown Reserve in the state of Alabama. Anyway, with me today, my good friend Conrad Thompson. And man, have we got a guest today.
We really do. This is one of our most requested guests. I've been counting the days till we could actually do this one.
Yeah, this guy never really got the recognition as a single because he's been in tag teams most of his life. But literally, ladies and gentlemen, one of the greatest professional wrestlers that I've ever been in the ring with, and a guy I had more fun wrestling and made more money with than all but about three guys. Ladies and gentlemen, the legendary Ricky Morton. And by the way, for women out there, if you've got an 18-year-old daughter, turn this off. Run and hide. It's Ricky Morton on the phone. Hello, Ricky.
Hello. Hello, Rick. I haven't seen you in a long time. What, just all weekend?
Yeah, I know, man. All two solid days.
Great times tonight for all the guys out there in, that are listening on this show. Thanks.
Yeah. But what a crowd. What a crowd Saturday night, huh?
I'm telling you, what I'm saying is thanks, because Bo and Ric Flair is on this show, we all make money. And I appreciate that, dude.
Well, I appreciate being there. So much fun.
Hey, you made a comment a while ago about Conrad, his car. I had the pleasure of staying at Conrad's house one time. And the next morning, we go eat barbecue over the town over. And I got the backseat of the car, and I'm asking him, are we late? I mean, we're doing 140 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah. I'm asking, are we late? I mean, we got to be there at a certain time.
No, that's...
Slow down, please.
No, when he comes to Atlanta to visit me, he'll take pictures of his speedometer with a reading 145, 160 on that back road. Of course, there's nobody in Alabama anyway to arrest him. So,
well, I'm telling you, I mean, I didn't understand.
That road between Chattanooga and Huntsville, there's nobody on it anyway.
Oh, I know it, but I got out of the car. Somebody asked me, "You all right?" I said, "Dude, I just did the Firecracker 500 for Ricky Rudd over here, man." My goodness, you're killing me.
No, it's the truth.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's
Rick,
exciting.
Thank you for having me on your show today, man. I mean, tonight. It's great, buddy. It's what you know. What a great compliment it is. Comment, and I'll give credit where credit due. You know, we're fixing to do a podcast here, and understanding when you ask me questions, and I hope people out there, and hope you do too, that when I answer with the truth. I don't mean to hurt nobody's feelings. I'll give credit where credit's due, but it's just the way it is. You have me on your show, and that's what we're going to do today. How's that?
Okay, well, the most requested question, I'm being facetious right now, but it's at least I want to know. So you've been wrestling 30, what, how many years now?
Rick, I've been wrestling 40 years.
Okay, that's even worse. How many women?
Hey, can I say this to you, Rick?
No, I'm just
kidding. You know, other night we were at Northport.
I'm making a joke.
I'm telling you this because I don't care. Other night I was in Northport. We were at the Scope. And I was down there in the parking garage, and I'm sitting here thinking to myself, and I could not count or even try to imagine how many girls I had in the basement of that Scope.
No, oh, I know.
I'm serious. I'm going.
Yeah.
Wow, okay, I'm such a slut, I know. But I'm just telling you the truth.
Yeah, I'm
looking around. I'm going, you've got to be kidding
hey,
me, man.
You'd have a tough time lying to me anyway. I already know. the bell will be ringing. They say, "Where's the Rock and Roll Express?" And Robert said, "I'm here."
Ricky was getting the hot tag.
Oh God!
Great. Well, all right, dude. Yeah.
Well, I'm so happy that you're doing well and love your family. Have you ever met his son?
I have met.
Yeah, his son's a better hand than a lot of the guys right now working in the business. Yeah. How old is he now, Rick, Ricky?
But you know what, Rick, and he does. You know, I come from a wrestling family. And, but it's just not that. And it's what, and you even told me this one time, too. And this is what is a great compliment. It's not about my son being a great worker in the ring. It's not about my son doing this. And what you're doing a lot of things. But you told me, you come up to me one day and you said, "Ricky Morton, your son has the best manners of any kid I've met.
Absolutely.
And see, that's a compliment to me. Yeah. I took that more as a compliment than anything else.
Oh, he's a great young man.
Well, thank you, Ricky. A big fan of yours, buddy.
Yeah.
He's an actor now, and he's doing a musical. And I could not tell him that you were on the card this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Until I got back home.
Well, I haven't seen him.
I haven't seen him
in about a year.
Oh, I know. He wanted to see Rick. And I told him, I said, "Dude, you got to go to you." Know, I couldn't let him know.
Yeah.
Great fan. And Conrad, you met my son before, too. But he's...
Yes, sir.
Now he's a head taller than I am now. Big boy. I don't know, but now I guess the postman stopped by a couple of times. All my kids are a foot taller than I am. I don't know what happened. You know?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, when did you guys first meet? It seems like y'all have known each other a long time.
Well, Robert and I?
No, I'm talking about Ric Flair and Ricky Morton. When did you guys first meet?
Dude, you know, I first met Rick. You know what? And I like to say this and that. You know, I used to work out in Kansas City. And I don't know if Rick remembers this or not, but Ricky come in. You know, he's a world champion. And I would jockey. I would fight. And I don't know if Rick remembers this or not. I wasn't me. I'd want to fight. I wanted to wrestle Rick on St. Louis TV. I mean, you know, because Rick was world champion. He didn't come out there because when you put Rick over on TV, you know, after the match, he'd come by and put a $100 bill in your hand. Rick, you remember that?
Yeah.
Yes, I was more than I made in 2 weeks.
No, but I had forgotten that you and I wrestled on TV. I know I always I was thinking that must have been like 81 or 82 then, right?
It was right around that area.
Yeah, I was thinking the first time I met you was like 84 when you guys were in Louisiana.
Yeah, well, I meant that's when you first seen Robert and I together, because, and understand me, I was just an underneath guy, and yeah. You coming in, but I'd want to work with you because I'd put you over on TV, and dadgum, you'd give me a $100 bill in my head. That's more I made in 2 weeks. And I was, God, I was in line. I fist fight somebody to put Flair over on TV. But you know why, Rick? And that's what I liked about you. And you took care of the boys like that. And being one of the boys and being underneath, that was a lot we looked forward to. I mean, we looked forward to you coming to town, not only because you sold out the places, but you helped us all. I mean, you gave, you know, when a guy worked with you and put you over, you took care of us, you gave us money. You see, that's things that I never forgot, never did. But, but when you came to Louisiana for Bill Watts, that's when you met Robert and I as the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah.
And that's just having a great run. And I never forget this either. I was working for Bill Watts, and this is after I've met you a couple of times, but we got the Superdome, and I'm in the dressing room getting dressed. Matter of fact, Muhammad Ali was there.
Exactly. Wow.
That night. But this man came in behind you, and I didn't know who he was. I'm serious. I did not know who he was, but everybody had left the room. And I'm sitting over there, and this man walked up to me and says, heard a lot about you. I come from Charlotte, North Carolina, just to watch you wrestle tonight, you and your partner. He said, Rick's told me a lot about you, and I didn't know who he was. You know, and when that's all he said. He walked off. And I went over and I asked somebody, who was that little man? He said, that was Jim Crockett. That owns
Crockett Promotion. We were recruiting, man.
Yeah, oh, you did. And after, you know, and I went and told, as a matter of fact, I was working at Ted DiBiase and Steve Williams that night. And I told Ted, I said, man, Jimmy Crockett, he said, buddy, we give him something to see, too. And when I came back, he asked us, he was interested in coming to Charlotte, North Carolina. And then he had a little talk, and I gave my notice on that Monday. 2 weeks later, I came to, We did our TV in Shelby, North Carolina, 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rick. Yeah, you know,
thank
I'm sure
you.
Did.
No, I tell you, what's funny is I go out there, and I didn't wrestle a lot at the Tulsa Fairgrounds.
Right.
But I probably was there five or six times. But my first time there, and I had never seen these guys, the Rock and Roll, work with the Midnight Express. And the fairgrounds probably held, 5,000-6,000, Ricky?
Oh, yes. You know, yes, Ricky,
maybe more, but it was, like, you know, but so
you know what, a little bit more, because we usually wrestled in Tulsa at the Excelsior downtown.
Exactly.
But they brought you in, and the fairgrounds was bigger.
Well, I walk out the door, and I hadn't seen these guys work, and I'm just there watching them having this phenomenal match, and then a full-scale riot. And I haven't even been in the ring yet.
Wow.
Well, I mean, they had heat with Cornette and these guys. I mean, they'd get Ricky down, and Ricky, I'll tell you this right now, three of the best guys, the good guys in the business that can sell like Ricky, Shawn Michaels, Ricky Steamboat, and Ricky Morton. I mean, when you had Ricky Morton down, people believed he was getting hurt.
Yeah.
You know? And that boy, and Cornette was fearless back then. I was surprised. He wasn't afraid of the heat either, boy. He had that
I watched Cornette learn to fight. I watched him get his butt whipped so many times he learned to fight. But you know, but you're talking about that, and this is a situation. Matter of fact, I was talking about this other night in the dressing room. We're talking about the guys the way they work now, being heels and being in Philadelphia was one of the biggest heel towns I've ever been in my life.
Yeah.
Ric Flair could not do no wrong, and I'm scheduled to go out and do an hour time limit with Ric Flair that night. So I don't know if you remember this or not, Rick.
No, I do.
We go out and we're having our match, and there, you know, and buddy, I was down, but in 10 minutes, Rick, see, that's what people don't understand no more about our business. You know, now if you got a heel cheering for you, they won't, you know, the young guys, they want the crowd to cheer for them. But in 10 minutes in the match, you have done turned this whole crowd around. Mm. Next thing I know, the crowd had done pushed the barricade all the way to the ring. Now, you back here, you're motioning for Arn Anderson to come down. Arn had to come down. Here come Robert down.
Yeah.
then right in the middle of the match, you said they could come back and start false finish me, and I'm going to get up and throw you over the top rope. If I don't get out of here, we're going to get killed. Yeah. And I never forget that. Well, yeah, we had to go home. We couldn't do it all the way. Rick, that's just being a part of the business that nobody knows no more.
Yeah.
I mean, God, what a phenomenal. And you're telling me, I mean, I don't got to tell nobody out here in the world. You know, one thing about Ric Flair, and I always just threw out, I was on the thing, and people said, man, let's go out and do something tonight. I said, dude, listen, I have got to wrestle Ric Flair for the next month every night. And if Ric Flair, dude, I mean, this is him. If I'm not to an hour time limit, we're going 59 minutes. Because, Rick, this is familiar to you. When people paid to see you, you gave them their money's worth no matter what. No matter if you're sick, no matter if anything. And that's what stands out to me. You wasn't an 8-minute wrestler. You didn't go in, you get out. You come to that ring, dude. That's the reason that Ric Flair is no matter, bar anybody in this world. And I'm not sitting here because I'm on the phone with you. I'm not sitting here trying to tell you this. But you gave people what they wanted. You're the real, real world champion out of everybody that has ever been one. And that's from my heart. And that's not about, you know, maybe you can cuss me out tomorrow. But that's what I'm saying to you, Rick.
Well, I really appreciate that, Ricky. I feel the same way about you. We had, it was a night off when I wrestled you. 1 week, I mean, I don't think people understand this. We got this program going, Ricky, and I'll let Ricky tell you the story. And we wrestled 9 1-hour draws 2 weeks in a row.
Twice on Saturday, twice on Sunday.
Wow. And we did that for two solid weeks until we went through every town in the territory.
And then we came back.
Yep.
And did an hour and a half.
Yeah, an hour and a half, a couple times, yeah.
That was
during the Horsemen Are Hot, but we did something in the Greensboro locker room, very similar to what we did with Steamboat 10 years earlier.
Concrete.
We got Ricky down, and, man, we rubbed his face in the cement and beat the crap out of Gibson. It was the four of us, right? And then we put that nose guard on Ricky, and we would go to the ring. And the girls loved Ricky Morton. I mean, this is no joke. You know, hence my opening line. I said this weekend, the kid Ricky, because there, I said, the difference between me and Morton is he likes those teeny boppers and the training bras. I like them. I like those chicks with a full sweater and an empty head. But but it got over with the kid. The little girls loved him. And so he'd wear this mask. And for 35, 40 minutes, I'd be trying to get it off him.
Right.
And when I finally got it off, man, he'd zip himself, bleeding like crazy. I mean, we could have a riot right there. And then the last 10 minutes.
That's what you did.
Yeah, the last 10 minutes, Dr. Flair went to work on himself. And, man, and it was all him, man, for 10 minutes. And they were screaming and hollering and boom. And the rib was, because it was really a rib. In the last 30 minutes, Robert came out first. No, Arn came out first. And then Robert had to come out and sit and watch him and I for 30 minutes every night. Instead of being done, it was brutal. Arn said, I hate this. he came out, and then Robert, they had to sit there for 18 hours in a row in 2 weeks.
I got you, Rick.
Oh, my God. Two hour draws in a day is a lot of wrestling, man. But it was
it is
a lot of wrestling and a lot of beer. But no beer till after the second match.
Remember, you and I were talking this weekend, and Father Time, and I would say that Father Time is undefeated, no matter who you are. But you know, I changed my life a lot, and Rick was ripping me all week because I quit smoking. About a year and a half, and I put on a little weight.
A little weight? He's actually a heavyweight contender now.
but changing my life, Rick, and work, but I still, you know, but dude, I'm 59 years old, and I still love this business. I still work hard. And it's sad when it's the only thing, you know, You know, it's, but.
Are you 59 years old?
Yes, I sure am.
I did not know that. I figured, I'm being honest, I thought you were just going to be 50. Wow.
No, Rick, I'm 59 years old.
It's the hair.
Yeah, but I thought he was, he's old, that makes you older than Barry and Iron. Those guys are both, 55?
Oh, I'm 57. Older than Bobby Eaton, Tommy Rich, and all of them.
Wow.
Ricky? Yes, I sure am.
I didn't know that.
Robert, I'm 4 years older than Robert. But what I was getting
that
to...
That can't be true.
I'm in better shape, really, than I was when I was 25 years old. But back then, I didn't go to bed for 30 years. So I don't...
Well, I know I was there with you for 30 of them, okay? and by the way, why wouldn't we have gone to bed?
I know. My greatest stories, too, I tell people, was your birthday, Rick, and we were in New York City, downtown. Then you're going to go see Chuck Berry.
Chuck Berry, yeah, I know.
We go down there, and Rick, making money, we're standing there, and Rick pays some guy a couple of grand for two seats right here. And by the time we sat down, Chuck Berry called us on stage. Yeah. Never slept in the seats.
Yeah. You know who that was? We walked in there with me, Dusty, Ricky. I think Hawk came too, right?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. And right in the front row, sitting right where I wanted to sit, was about four people. And guess who was sitting right next to him? Liza Minnelli.
Oh, yes.
Bill Murray,
yeah.
Right? And Dan Aykroyd, right? They're all smoking marijuana, passing around the joint. So the guy next to me, I said, what's going to cost me to have these seats? And it was like $1,500 to get the four seats. We just sat down. But it was my birthday. I loved Chuck Berry, man. He was playing. It was the Lone Star Cafe.
It's not even there anymore.
Sir. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com. By now, you know that everything is crazy overseas, and well, that's created some volatility in the market. We actually saw rates tick down a little bit this week. We don't know how long it'll stay that way. All the experts are predicting that there is going to be a rate hike this month in the month of March. Some are saying 25 basis points. Others are saying 50. What does that mean? It means waiting will cost you money. And by the way, I want to mention, this is still a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity just based on your real estate values. You see, all of a sudden, your house is worth considerably more than it was just a couple of years ago. And as a result, you can use that newfound equity to change your life. We're routinely helping our podcast listeners take their 30-year loan and pay it off in half the time. And how can they afford to do that without their payments going sky high? We get rid of all their other debt. And I mean it. As a heads up, what would you do if you had no credit card debt? Just like that, it was all paid off. How much easier would life be if those car payments, whoop, they're out of here. No more car payments. That is the story that we're able to help our friends and family with at SaveWithConrad.com. You see, the interest you pay on your credit cards, not tax deductible, and sky high. The interest you pay on your car loans. Buddy, where is that going? What if we could restructure all of your debt, use some of this newfound equity, and at the same time, get you out of debt faster? You see, what we're talking about is reducing the time on your mortgage. Yes, we're going to get you a great rate, but if you're in a 30-year loan, think about what your life looks like 30 years from now. Man, life gets a lot easier when you're completely debt-free, and that's what we want to help you do. And by the way, you don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket. And oh, as a heads up, if you've been thinking, hey man,
I like my house, but my kitchen's kind of outdated. What if we could get you the cash you need to turn your average kitchen into something your wife loves, and it wouldn't change your monthly payment at all? Why wouldn't you do that? You see, you'd be reinvesting back in your own property. That's going to make your house worth even more. And oh yeah, you can do it with cheaper monthly payments at SaveWithConrad.com. Now, I know it sounds too good to be true, but I want you to go check out our reviews for yourself. See what some of our new family members are saying at ConradReviews.com. You'll see there we've got over 1,000 verified reviews. Our average rating is 4.72. And if we were a restaurant with 1,000 reviews and a 4.72 rating, I know where you're eating dinner, and I know where you need to do your next loan. It's SaveWithConrad.com. NMLS number 65084, Equal Housing Lender. Oh, and did I mention no house payments for 2 months? That's SaveWithConrad.com.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ric Flair, 16 times your world heavyweight champion, along with my good friend and co-host Conrad Thompson. We do a show called Woo Nation, the number one podcast on CBS. And our guest today is not even arguably, but sincerely coming from me, and I'm sure in the minds of anybody that's ever really known our sport, the greatest babyface, good guy, whatever the terminology you want to use, in the history of the business, the legendary Ricky Steamboat. Ricky, how are you, man?
Hey, Champ, I'm doing well.
Down in Tampa?
St. Pete.
You're in St. Pete. I knew that. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, just a stone's throw away from Madeira Beach.
Yeah, I know. Well, you were born in Tampa, right?
Well, actually, no, but I grew up in St. Pete. Went to schools here.
Well, you won the high school state wrestling championship at what high school?
Bogusiega.
That's right, yeah. Because you were a couple years behind Mike Graham. A lot of people don't realize Mike Graham was a state champion as well. Remember Mike, right?
When I was a sophomore and Mike was a senior in the district finals. Now, you had to win districts. I was in 10th grade.
Yeah.
District finals, you had to win districts, which then when you would qualify you to go to states. I met Michael Gossett for the first time. And he beat me by a point. And there sitting ringside in the bleachers was his dad, Eddie.
Yeah. What a small world, huh? A lot of people don't realize, what a tragic situation that's been with Eddie and Mike's son, of course. But, So, anyway, Rick, I got this gig because they heard me on Austin's. And... the first one I did on Austin's, I was drinking, so I was very entertaining. So you can only imagine. So CBS called my agent, Melinda, who you know, and said, what do you think about Flair doing a podcast? And here I am 5 weeks in. So, and I'm lucky because I have a wealth of friends from all these years in the business. But, we could discuss our personal accolades and all that, but I want to say from the bottom of my heart that, you rocked my world and I rocked yours, I think, on a very equal basis. We made music like nobody's ever made, and probably the greatest compliment that I've heard in the last 20 years, which is saying a lot, is that my daughter Ashley right now is currently engaged in a series of matches with a girl named Sasha Banks. And Ashley's name is Charlotte, her wrestling name.
Yeah.
And they're comparing their matches. They're saying they're as good as Steamboat and Flair.
Wow, that's awesome.
So to hear someone say that to me about my daughter, I'm thrilled because, you and I have discussed it 1,000 times. I was 40 and you were 35 in 89. So, and we started wrestling when I was 30 and you were 26. So. how many green? I bet we had 100 better than that in Greenville on a Monday night, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. A lot of times when I'm doing stuff like this, talking on radio to different, wrestling fans and DJs and this and that, I always tell them, I said, you guys never got a chance to see the matches that we saw, like in Charleston or, Greensboro or, Charlotte, I've got a particular match in Charlotte that I always refer to, and it holds a big, strong memory in my mind. And it puts you over in a position to which our wrestling guys today have to understand timing, you know? And if we get it, we get into this this discussion today, I'll go ahead and tell that story.
Well, but, no, go ahead.
You go ahead and tell it. Just don't tell the one. Oh, you can now. I'm divorced. You can tell the one about the three times you went out to the hell's the name of that place. You told me that.
Oh, you're talking about the what was the name of that club?
No,
it was in the late 70s.
Yeah, Conrad will love that. The name of the club will come to me. Tell the other story.
All right, this was like I'm going to say early 80s.
2001.
The 2001 club.
Yeah.
You want me to tell that story? You want me to tell that story?
Yeah, you can
too?
Tell that first. We got a bunch of them.
Okay.
We got time.
It's a very innocent story. This was a time in which they turned to babyface, and we were wrestling. And Piper at the time was also a babyface.
Yep.
So you, myself, and Piper were all babyfaces, and there was a time in Charlotte to which we have Piper, my partner, then 2 weeks later they wrestled in Charlotte at that time it was called Independence Arena, now it's Bojangles, and you were my partner, you know, and that created a lot of interest. But on the first time after the show, we would go down to the 2001 club, me, you, Piper, and of course it would be the entourage of fans and also wrestlers slash girlfriends and wives. And then the owner of the place had an area for us, you know, seating
Bill,
area.
Bill Cartwright. Bill Cartwright.
Couches and, yeah. Couches and stuff like that. Had our own bar. Well, to make a long story short, at the end of the night, the bar tab was $1,000. Now, you go back to, like, 1981, $1,000. So here comes Rico. He comes up to me and Piper, and he said, "All right, guys, bar tab tonight is $1,000. I'm gonna tip them $200. So it's $1,200, and we're gonna split it three ways." And I looked at you and I said, "You know, I've had three beers tonight, Rico."
what do you say?
Three beers.
Sorry.
And, you know, and Roddy, of course, Roddy was all sports. There's no telling. I see he injected into his body. So, we, you know, $400 a piece. Okay. 2 weeks later, Charlotte Coliseum. Here comes the three of us back to the 2001 club. Another $1,000 bar tab, $200 tip, split three ways. 2 weeks later, a third time. And after the third time, I got Roddy and you together, and I said, "Okay, guys. That's it. Doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that one of us, it's been three times in a row, there's three of us flipping the bill for all the arena rats and all the groupies and all the boys and this, you know, girlfriends slash wives.
Arena rats?
It's just been the three of us that have been paying for this, three guys doing it three times. I take a rocket scientist. I figured, I paid for one of these $1,200 nights, and that was the end of that. At those three nights at the 2001 club. You know, I don't know what kind of money that would translate today. You know, you're talking 35 years later. $1,200 with a ton of money.
Well, I got to tell you, before we start getting serious, I got to tell one better than that. So 1978, I'm not the world champion. I'm just the U.S. champion, or I was chasing him one way or the other. But we were smoking hot and selling out every arena. And so Christmas week of 78, because I had just bought the house in Montebello, Rick, and you had the house on Carmel Road, remember?
Yes.
Up on the hill. Okay, so...
Yes. God, you got a good memory.
Yeah, well, I stayed there during my first divorce, if you remember correctly. Your place.
Midnight.
I shared the cool whip with you on top of the hill.
You know what you showed up with? It's midnight at 1 o'clock in the morning, knock on, I go out the door. There's Rick Flair standing. He's got his wrestling bag in one hand, which was a halibut. And then the other hand, he's got about three or four of his $5,000 robes.
And that's all I got now. Listen, Rick, so... Anyway, and so Rick and I go to the office. And they hand me, and we wrestled Christmas week, okay, which was the biggest week for us. That meant wrestling, not, we had Christmas Eve off, but we wrestled twice on Christmas Day. And then we wrestled big events, big venues all week long. So for seven days.
Between there and New Year's.
Between there, yeah. And we were wrestling, like, at that point, Rick and I were probably doing, I'm guessing, either an hour draw or 45, 50 minutes every night. Twice on Christmas Day and then twice on the weekend. So like nine times of wrestling, right?
Right.
But we both got a check for $8,800 for the week in 1978.
Wow.
And I called him and I said, Jesus Christ, Rick, thank you, man. What the hell, $8,000? And he goes to me, yeah, you know, but I'm tired of this bullshit working on holidays. You know, Rick, it's pushing me. It's, you know, it's taxing my marriage. I don't like being gone this much. I said, what'd you just say to me? I said, I'll meet you at the bar in about a half hour, man. He actually was going to quit.
Wow.
He called George Scott and said, I'm tired of this shit. You know, I got better things to do. I said, what do you got better to do than make $8,000? I already spent mine. I need to make eight more next weekend.
You know,
do you remember that
is a true story, fans and comrades. I do, but yeah.
Yeah, I go, you are what? I don't know. I've never known you to be on drugs, but somebody is giving you something over the holidays. Jeez, he just said, I'm quitting. He called him George Scott. Scott said, called me and said, Steamboat quit. I said, what?
Yeah.
God.
That's one of the stupid Ricky Steamboat decisions. Or statements.
No, yeah. That's okay. We got you back on track. It took about 48 hours, but you were fine.
is it okay to tell a story about a match that, you know, that George Scott set up and all that?
Yes,
of course,
sir.
Yeah,
please,
Rick, tell anything. Anything goes.
All right. We're wrestling in Charlotte Coliseum. And like you said, we have wrestled so many times there and did 1 hour draws, Broadway's, you know. And George goes, look, you two guys tonight, let's flip Rick over, Flair, and give him really something hot. And you don't need to go all night. I mean, you guys have worked here so many times to 1 hour draws. He says, because, you know, he looked at me and he said, I didn't want to be Steamboat and I didn't want to be Flair. So you go out there and wrestle to a draw. The fans go away knowing that they saw a hell of a match. But tonight, let's throw a monkey wrench into this situation. And Flair, you go over, you come up with something hot, and, you know, just give me 20, 25 minutes. Well, hell, we're not even warmed up at 25 minutes. So we both say, okay. So, and he just said, what do you want? I said, what do you want to do? He says, when it's right, I'll just, you know, I'll be in the corner like I do, begging off, and you come in, give me one of your big chops or something during your comeback, and I'll just sweep your feet out from under you and put my feet up on the second rope and tell Tommy to get down and count. So we go out there and we work. We have our match 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50 minutes, 55 minutes. Now the fans have already been conditioned that when us two go that long, they're all sitting there and they say, oh, it's another draw. It's another Broadway, right? So 56. And at this time, back in those days, the announcer would count, you know, 5 minutes left, 4 minutes left, 3 minutes left, you know, 58 gone, 2 minutes left, ladies and gentlemen, 59, 1 minute left. Here we got 1 minute, and I'm waiting from the call from you. And here we go, 30 seconds, ladies and gentlemen, 30 seconds left. And then we get down to 15. You beg off in the corner, I charge in, you sweep my feet out from under me. You tell Tommy, get down and count. You got your feet up there in the second rope. Now, as the announcer is counting 10, 9, 8, Tommy goes 1, 2, 3. And there's like, you know, the big clock we used to hang in the center of the Charlotte Coliseum, like they use for basketball. We roll out of that. I'm laying on my back. I'm sucking air through my asshole by this time. You know, I'm blowed up. And you look over at me and you go, we got him, kid. Because when he did the 1, 2, 3, there was about a 3-second silence. Coliseum sold out. And then here it comes. Here comes the roar and the stuff's flying and you take off and you're running back to the heel locker room. and they're throwing stuff at you and everything like that. What a moment. This is what I was saying early on when you and I, when we first hooked up today, and I said, Ric Flair and his timing. How much closer could you have got to that where you did a screw finish on me when there was like 4 seconds left on the clock?
Well, as a FYI, you're the only person in the business except Shawn Michaels that I could probably have ever done that with.
Well, because thank you very much, but that, you know.
He's the only guy.
And as a thousand times that we worked with each other, that match just sticks out in my head. And, you know, something I'll never forget. I don't know if any of the boys today could ever duplicate something like that. But, you know, that was all on your shoulders. That was your call. That was your timing. You had to watch me and do your stuff and at the same time listen for the announcer making his call. And it was a tremendous moment.
Yeah, well, we...
It's one of those moments that never was filmed, you know, never taped, just a house show, you know? Something like that, God, what a thing it would be to put on a DVD and play back, you know, a moment...
Yeah, you know what's wrong with that, Rick? You know what happened when, which a lot of people, I don't even know if Conrad knows that, when Crockett went bankrupt and they had to sell to Turner?
Yeah.
Prior to going bankrupt, the last year, they dubbed old tapes. So all those matches back then, like in the 70s with you and me and Wahoo and Mulligan and you and yeah. Jay and Slaughter and Canoodle and all those. Well, those were in the 80s, I guess. But anything from the 70s, unless it was a YouTube deal or something like that, all that stuff, they were dubbing over.
Yeah.
All the stuff with me and Mulligan where he tore up my robe and all that thing.
Yeah.
And then the time.
He wore it too, right?
Beg your pardon?
He put it on and wore it.
He wore, yeah, my peacock robe, yeah, because I stomped on the hat that Waylon Jennings gave him. It was a great angle. They put the pantyhose up everywhere, but the best angle in the history of the business, I'll still say it is, was the one when you and me, where I wore the lime green thong.
Yeah,
with Ernie Ladd's workout socks in the front for the cushion and for the look, and you tore off all my clothes.
I couldn't get the tie off.
I know, not
turn the tie. So you're standing there with a tie, lime green undies, and knee socks up to your knees.
Yeah, exactly.
This is like 78-ish.
No, 77 when you first came, because. They had me beat your ass the first time, and we went around, and there was nobody there. The next week,
you
stripped me naked, and we sold out everything.
Yeah, you rubbed my face in the concrete, and then I had to go backstage and let Harley Race sandpaper my face.
I know.
Oh,
God.
Wow. We got to hear that story.
I'm sorry about that.
You know, I had a discoloration on over. He sandpapered me so much that he took the eyebrow off of one side. And I had a burned discoloration. I looked like Spot the dog.
Yeah, it was terrible.
And 6 months later, I'd walk into a 7-Eleven or something, and cashier, you know, in the Carolinas, they all watch wrestling. They're mid-Atlantic, and he says, "Oh my God, that was real.
That was real.
Your face. I mean, that happened 6 months ago, and your face is still disfigured."
Yeah, well, Harley, you know, it's funny because we're up the stairs in the old WRL locker room, and Harley tells David Crockett, he said, "Get some sandpaper."
That is right. He told David Crockett.
And Crockett.
David brings back what they call the variety pack.
Yeah, I've never seen this.
There's about ten sheets, and the top one is just like very, very fine.
Yeah.
And Harley reaches down and pulls out the bottom sheet, and it looks like there's granite rocks.
Yeah.
On this piece of sandpaper.
He gets
a couple of boys to hold me down my arms, and he said, "This is going to hurt, kid." And he starts sandpapering my face.
No, worse than that, Rick. First, he folded it, and he cut you with it. Then he sandpapered to the cuts.
Right.
He put five slits. I mean, like with the sandpaper?
Yeah.
Put five slits in Rick's under his eye, and then he sandpapered it. It was brutal. I mean, it was brutal. And then...
Like 82? When was this?
No, 77, 78. Harley was the world champion. I mean, and then what really was brutal is they put methylate on top of it. Oh, Steamer was screaming like a Scotty was mad.
Oh, yeah.
No, the Methylate had to hurt the worst, you know, the, like pouring alcohol on it.
Wow.
Yeah, but he literally had it for a year.
You remember, you remember the one-shot hard way?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's when you hit me, right? Was that Harley hitting you?
We're on the side of the ring and we're sitting on the cement floor and you're standing behind me and you take my chin and you tilt it back and you go, like, sorry, kid. And we won hard way and here it came to make my eyes swell up,
yeah.
Shut and swell. Yeah.
I wasn't very good at that either.
I don't know. Bray Wyatt disagrees.
Yeah, Bray Wyatt. Yeah. That was just a timing issue. He ducked, yeah, when I said stand still. Oh, God. Well, those are amazing days. I mean, you know, it's so funny because, you know, here we are. I bought this house that was ahead of its time in Montebello, which is a really nice area in Charlotte. And Rick would come over, and back then he would hold Megan. Remember the pit in that house, Rick?
Oh, yeah.
And Megan would sit in your lap. I mean, it was amazing. And Harley would be there. We'd everybody before we went up to either Thanksgiving or Christmas for Greensboro, you know.
Right.
And
those were the big shots.
I'm thinking it was Christmas.
Yeah, and here's Megan now. And Megan just turned 40. And here she was sitting in Rick's lap. She was about 5 years old.
Wow.
Right.
That's how long we've been friends, man. Think about that.
Yeah.
All the ladies love Slick Rick. You know they love Woo Nation. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Do you love listening to your favorite podcasts on Play.it? Sign up today for the Play.it newsletter to receive monthly updates on new podcasts, notable guests, trending shows, and more. Sign up now at PlayItNewsletter.com. That's PlayItNewsletter.com. Hear what you've been missing.
The greatest talker in the history of the business is behind the mic once again. This is Woo Nation with Ric Flair.
So when did you guys first meet? Did y'all meet with Vern, or was it after that?
No, what happened was, and I'll tell the story because the guy's name, if I don't do if I don't hear it, if I don't use his name, I'll forget it. I went to Atlanta TV, and he had just come to Atlanta from Minneapolis,
okay.
Richard Blood. So I see him, and I go, holy shit. I come back and tell Crockett. I said, there's a guy down there that'll be unbelievable. And so Crockett goes, what's his name? I said, Richard Blood. I said, but, you know, he could go with Sam Steamboat's kid. We could do something, right? And what happened was, is Crockett called Barnett. Oh, my boy. I do like one-man gang. And so they one-man gang went to Georgia, and we got Ricky Steamboat.
Wow.
But that's boy, a hell was of a that trade. Was that an uphill battle, man? Because every baby face in the territory from Johnny Weaver up went upside down. Here comes Mr. America walking through the door, looked like Steve Reeves winning the Mr. America contest, right?
Right.
They were so jealous. I never saw anything like it. Remember, Rick?
Oh, yeah.
Cow. They wouldn't even talk to him. Wahoo, Paul Jones, and those guys, they were miserable. Here comes this kid looking like Mr. America, right? Carrying a surfboard. Jesus, are you kidding? I wish I still had a picture of that thing they made. The only thing that Crockett ever did right in marketing is they made this picture of him with a carrying a surfboard down at Myrtle Beach. Remember that, Rick?
Well, they did two posters of me, one with a surfboard and one with me standing there with some jeans on and no shirt.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this was way before Kerry Von Erich and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And he was so damn good looking, and his physique was so outstanding. But boy, you know, back then, this was that's Ricky's kind of one of those guys that started to change that time when a bayfish, you know, couldn't weigh 300 pounds anymore, or couldn't weigh 250.
Right.
You know, this was a weight-trained guy with a good amateur background. I mean, the only guy like him in the business at that time who was considerably older than Rick was Jack Briscoe. Jack had a good natural, but not a weight train as much as just a natural physique. But it's like, I always tell the two guys that no matter how hard they try, they could never be bad, is Jack Briscoe was just too damn handsome. But he had to work heel once in a while, but nobody really liked him as a heel. And Ricky couldn't be a heel. I mean, you take Ricky Steamboat, Sting, and Jack Briscoe, there's three guys that could never be heels.
Right.
Jack Briscoe could once in a while because, but against Dory or Terry or Harley, who's going to be the heel, right?
I mean,
I guess he was against Wahoo when he worked with Wahoo and Charlotte. But if you take Stinger and Jack and Ricky Steamboat, I mean, they're just guys that you're just too nice a guy to ever be a bad guy anyway, Rick. Does that make sense?
There's just a handful of us that worked through their whole career, and I mean by, you know, having a 20-plus year career and stayed on one side of the fence through the whole career, you know, never jumped ship, not once. Although in 91, I did go to, you know, promotion to say, you know, I'd like to work heel, you know, because about that time I had about 16, 17 years in, and I said, you know, before I exit out, I'd like to at least experience it one time. And then Pat Patterson said, you know, Ricky, no way. You're just a baby face, and that's all you'll be. And I look back on it now, and I kind of thank him because of that fact. It's just a handful of us. It just, you know, I started out as a baby face and ended as a baby face 20 years later.
So when you went to the WWF in 91, I guess you went back, rather, and they put you with, you know, the headdress deal and the breathing fire and all that. Whose idea was that, and how do they pitch that? What does that look like?
That was Vince's idea, and wanted to repackage me was the verbiage. And just like starting over and I also almost like, you know, starting over even on the card, I was, you know, doing the second, third match, wrestling Haku. And was going to do a slow build on me and build me back up. But they wanted to repackage me with, you know, bringing the fire in and the dragon outfit. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you're listening to Woo Nation right here with Ric Flair. Of course, we're on play.it, and you can follow our guest on Twitter, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. He's on Twitter at Real Steamboat, so check him out there. Ricky, let's talk briefly about when you first left Crockett and went to Vince in New York the first time. There was talk at the time, and maybe this was just kayfabe stuff, that you were thinking about getting out of the business and opening gyms, and then it wasn't too long after that that you were working for Vince. What happened there, and what was the reason for the departure from the Crocketts?
Well, you know, this is what happened. I came to the Carolinas in 77. This was late 84. Been there for 7 years working as a babyface. George had left, and he had went to the WWF at that time to work alongside with Vince as the booker. And Dusty came in to book. Now, you know, Dusty's got a great mind on his shoulders, but it's kind of hard to, you know, to deal with a guy that was still working and also the guy with the pencil,
right?
The booker, and he put Tully Blanchard and I together, and at that time Tully was the TV champion, and in the Mid-Atlantic area, even though it was a main event match, and all main event matches were 60 minutes, the TV championship was on the line for the first 15, and that was because, like, that would be the time limit on television. So he put me and Tully together, Dusty did, and we wrestled all North and South Carolinas and, you know, up into Virginia's, and I'd go over, you know, like in 17, he'd go home with the championship, and I'd win the match. So we did that. Then we got back on TV, and Crockett, you know, extended the time limit from 15 to 20 or 25 or something. So we went all the way around the territory and did that. And I could never win the championship from him. And after a couple of tours, Dusty booked himself with Tully and Greensboro and 15-minute time limit, went out there and beat him in 12 minutes.
Wow.
And became the champion. So I saw the writing on the wall, kind of, sort of, at the time, to which all I did was just make Tully look good. Tully's a hell of a worker, too. And but just using me as that, at that time, you know, the Mid-Atlantic's top babyface. And then he brought Nikita Koloff, and we did a thing on TV to which I had a match, went over, and I was walking back to the locker room. I turned around, and Nikita came flying down the aisle, to which I knew, and, you know, his clothesline was called the Russian sickle. Well, when he hit me from behind, I thought my head was out there in the upper bleachers somewhere.
Yeah.
And I kind of saw there that I was going to work with Makita and end up putting him over, and just for Dusty to pencil himself in and work with Makita. And, of course, that would be, you know, Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, USA, USA against the Russian. So I gave a call to George, and we started talking. The next thing you know, they flew me up, and I started working for the WWE at the time. You know, and I got to give thanks to Dusty for that, because then my career took off in a different direction, but I think it bumped up another level because I started working for them.
Yeah, and I'm not saying this with any malice, but I had to work with Nikita a lot. That was a handful, man.
Ooh. Especially when he was green, right?
Yeah, the Russian sickle. He just, in all fairness, you know, his real name being Scott Simpson, is that he lived that gimmick better than anybody I've ever seen in the history of the business.
He even changed his legal name.
Yeah, but he never talked. I mean, he did a real good job, but he just one of those guys that really never got. He never really had a clue in the ring. Does that make sense?
Yeah, the finer points, the finesse.
He didn't have to,
right?
Because he was a gimmick, and the people believed it, and he drew money, and you know, it's what. But he I know what Ricky's saying about knocking your head off your shoulders. Because he never loosened up. He never, I give a lot of guys, I'll say a lot of guys never have the chance or the ring time or are trained. I think he was trained by Eddie Sharkey. I mean, you know.
Always. Yeah, he was a Minnesota boy, too.
Yeah, but right? he wasn't a Vern Gagne guy, you know. So
no.
He didn't have to do the 500 free squats and all that, you know. So
And he was big at that time, wasn't he, Rick?
285, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they made that vignette with him in the dungeon, which was way ahead of its time, and that thing really put him over. Just somebody's garage, but they made it look like he was down in a dungeon training with Ivan Koloff. You remember?
And, oh yeah.
He had the neck harness on and all that, and he had huge traps, and he looked the part. And the gym that we all went to back then, which Rick and I saw each other every day at, was King's Gym. Before it became World Gym, have been World by the time he got there, and he would never talk to anybody. He'd walk around the gym every day. I don't think he ever said a word of English in the gym for 2 or 3 years.
No, and if he did have to talk, it'd always be in that Russian accent.
Yeah, I mean, he would just make a noise, you know, because he couldn't speak Russian, obviously, but. Yeah, but he had a funny career. He didn't hang around that long, and then. Tried to come back. I can remember we tried to get him to come to Atlanta, and he came down and said, I just don't want to do it. So, but he made his money. I guess he's doing okay.
Yeah.
I think he's involved in the ministry now and stuff like that.
He is, yes, sir.
So,
Ricky, once you got to the WWF, you know, you had been, you know, spent a great portion of your career at that point working for the Crocketts. What was the biggest difference you noticed in working for the Crocketts versus working for the McMahons?
Well, as the early stages of WrestleMania, you know, to me it was the scope of everything. You know, the venues of the large cities and the production level of TV. It just seemed like it was making it bigger than life. To me, we were just used to doing work in studios and stuff like that, and not knowing. I didn't know at the time that how the business was going to grow, but you just had some kind of gut feeling that this thing was way different than the way the business had been projected for the past, you know, prior 50 years.
And one of the big ways, you know, that Vince really took the company national when we're talking about bigger television products was, of course, Saturday night's main event. And you famously had a match, an angle with Jake the Snake Roberts there. And, Rick, I don't know, did you know about the DDT on the floor?
No. I was always working. I mean, I didn't see a lot of that stuff because I was working every time, you know.
Right.
Even when Tully and I were there, I never got to see it because you know, our schedule was completely different than theirs. They taped on Tuesdays, And that time, they weren't on Raw at that time. They were taping at network TV for NBC, right? Am I saying that right, Rick?
Right.
When you guys would tape every other Tuesday. I did a little of that, too, in the 90s when I went. But, no, I never even saw it. As a matter of fact, I was wrestling Sting. I was wrestling Sting when he wrestled the Steam,
Macho.
Macho. I was in a Clash of Champions with Sting. Am I saying that right, Rick?
That is correct.
Yeah, you guys were in Detroit for that one, right?
Yeah, 1987.
Yeah, 87. I was wrestling Sting in Greensboro.
Okay.
At the Clash of Champions, so I never even saw their match. I just heard the next day, which pissed me off, that Ricky Steamboat said he had the best match of his life. And I said, well, just because he won.
Well, let's just go ahead and talk about that. You know,
I'm just kidding. But I mean, I couldn't have been happier because, I know how good Ricky Steamboat
sure.
is, you know. But, you know, it just, I didn't, the whole thing, it's the truth. If you're booking and you're working, and you're a bay face, it never works out. It just doesn't, because if you're booking and you like he said with Dusty, who has so much talent and so much charisma, but you know, he's going to push himself. You know, I mean, but Ricky was so over in the territory. There's always, in my estimation, there's room for two or three guys. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, but what happens is they come and they want to get their own guys they're familiar with and all that, and Magnum kind of took over Rick's spot, you know what I mean? And Magnum was going to be the next guy and probably would have been a champion had it not been for the terrible car wreck, you know, that he was in. I think they were pushing Magnum to be the next world champion. So
I agree, Rick. I heard they were grooming him for that NWA spot.
Yeah. No, I'm sure they were, because I was working with him all the time and putting him over, and he was a great guy, a great kid, too. I mean, I was in Birmingham, Alabama, when someone called me and told me about the car wreck, you know, and I just.
He was a Virginia Beach kid, right?
Yes, he's up there. And, I mean, he actually wrestled in college for a little bit up at Old Dominion. And then, but Jesus, you know, not to change the subject from ours, but you and I know how hard it was with Vern, but when Gene and Ole, when they had that building over on Fairview, where the Crockett's, where we used to, the big building when they bought later on, remember, Rick?
Yeah.
And God, they brought Terry Allen down for to break him in, and Buzz Sawyer was there. Oh my God, they beat up Terry Allen so bad. Buzz Sawyer was tough.
Yeah.
And it was Ole, Gene, and Buzz Sawyer. They beat up Terry Allen so bad. I saw him. We walk out of the parking lot.
You said they beat up their hands so bad on him?
They what?
You said they beat up their hands so bad?
They beat him up so bad.
Okay, I thought you were saying they hurt their hands on him.
No, no,
like, wow, that's another thing.
Gene Anderson was a sadistic son of a bitch boy. And Ole was kind of a bully, you know, and they just, they stretched these guys and, I mean, beat the crap out of them. And he had to be in pretty good shape to have wrestled in college. And I think he was a state champion of Virginia. I don't think he went to Granby or anything like that, but... Anyway, he had a good amateur background, but those guys, it was so hard to get in the business down then. And, you know, it's like, they almost killed Iron Sheik when the Sheik came in. And Sheik was tougher than hell.
Right.
But, you know, the way Gene and Ole would get these guys to do run up and down stairs and do a thousand squats and then get in the ring with them.
Right.
Very similar to the way Bill Watts and Eddie Graham did with guys. You know, they loved to, you know, beat up guys. That's one of the reasons I've always admired Jack Briscoe. Briscoe would never go down to the Sportatorium. You know these stories, Rick. And stretch,
yeah.
And, you know, Bob Roop would beat the crap out of these guys, and Jack would never do it. Either with Jerry, you know. Because they'd beat the guy, a guy that was already exhausted, you know what
right.
I mean? But Ole and Gene was so poor. I said, hang in there, kid. You'll be okay. It'll get better. I said, if you hang in there for a couple times, you'll be fine.
You know, you think about that happening back in the day, you know, in the 70s. You think about how many good talent might have come out if they didn't quit because of getting their ass handed to them.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm like you, I know. But funny, after what I went through, and I quit three times, and thank God Vern made me come back. But after what I went through, I didn't feel bad for him. I'm sure you went through the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Vern was tougher than hell with us. And I had Bill. Did you have Billy Robinson, too?
Oh, he'd come down and, you know, after we, you know, Costco would put us, the Sheik put us through doing, you know, 1,000 squats and 1,000 push-ups. And then here comes Robinson. And, you know, he was a bully.
Oh, of course he was. But, I mean,
He bloodied my nose and lip up a few times.
Were you in the barn as well, right?
No, we were in the basement of the building that Vern just moved his office to.
Over in Excelsior. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I was in the barn and 30 below weather, or 30 degree weather, I was miserable. Oh, but it all, you know, I look back at it now and I'm glad I went through it, you know. I think you know, even though I quit three times, I am glad I finished it. I mean, obviously I am, but.
Let me tell you real quick, Kyle's were there and that building was 20 stories and starting at the basement, it was 21. So we were in the stairwell and we were running, you know, steps up, running stairs up to the top and run back down.
Yeah.
And then Cos got the idea. He paired us off, and then you get a guy up on your shoulders, fireman carry, and then you carry a guy up 21 flights.
Oh, I know. Yeah, hey, listen, they were queer. Are you kidding? God, I did that stuff with Paul Ellering in Japan.
Yeah.
I said, boy, I love you. I'm going to the free.
You get to the top and you drop the guy, you run back down, then he carries you up.
Yeah. Well, you weren't the. Do you know? Here's a story very few people know. Do you remember the name Brian Oldfield?
God,
He had the, well, he had the world record in the shot put. You won the Olympics.
Okay.
Brian Oldfield.
I got it. Yeah. I got it.
And he showed up in Excelsior. I've heard the story 100 times. Handsome, big, 6'5, 280 pounds, built like a Greek god, blonde hair. And he tells Vern he wants to be a wrestler. They sent him downstairs with Cosrode. He left the building crying 2 hours later. And nobody ever saw him again.
Wow.
This is the guy that won the Olympic gold medal and had the world record. He's the guy that the first guy to do 70 feet, Brian Oldfield. See, I am just an athletic. I am like a mind trust.
You really are.
A brain trust.
I mean, it's it's impressive.
If I raced Jesse Owens. I'll be right back. It's time to shine my 16 world titles.
Time to tell you about something I'm super passionate about, protecting your family. Yes, this is a life insurance ad for GoliathLife.com, but to me, this is really about peace of mind. Think about insurance for a second. We all get medical and auto insurance, yet we never even know if we're going to have a need for it. Let me let you in on a little secret. You need life insurance. We're all going to die. Now, as you let that reality sink in, think about what would happen if your family stopped having your income tomorrow. If you don't have a plan for that, you need to visit GoliathLife.com. And I mean right now. And just personally, I've lost two friends in their 40s this past year and a half, and I don't even want to think about what their families would be going through had they not had life insurance. If you don't have it, get it. Protect your family. And I suggest you go to GoliathLife.com because they've made the process of getting affordable life insurance super easy. Goliath Life streamlines the life insurance process by allowing you to get quotes from more than 20 carriers within minutes, and you'll pick your terms and payments to fit your budget. You pick your price, you start the online application immediately, and even schedule the medical exam to come to you. And I've done it. They sent someone to my office. I skipped the phone calls, the paperwork, and the crazy invasive conversations. Goliath Life makes buying life insurance simple. There's no hidden fees, no upsells, no hassle, hell, not even a phone call. Goliath Life is life insurance in your hands on your time. Get multiple quick quotes right now from the comfort of your own home and begin your application in a few easy clicks right now at GoliathLife.com.
The greatest talker in the history of the business is behind the mic once again. This is Woo Nation with Ric Flair.
So one of my favorite stories about Ricky's team, what we could talk all day long, is the day that he did a 465-pound bench press at WRLA-TV. Clean. Straight. I'm not kidding you. After wrestling me for a month, an hour every night.
Wow.
Yeah, because here's what we do. We do an hour. He was training for the Mr. North Carolina contest, and his competition was Jimmy Snuka, who'd been Mr. Hawaii five times. I'm doing all the promotion on this contest right here. So, and everybody in the territory was into it. And it was down at the auditorium next to the Ovens Auditorium. So Steamboat and I would wrestle. And I think I was staying in this house, and I think I was having another marital issue. So we'd get in the car after the town, and I would drink. He'd say, I'm going to have 3 Miller Lights, and I'm going to eat 3 McNuggets. And don't even put anything else in front of me. And that is like, you were like, if I remember correctly, he helped me out, Rick, 60 carbs a day.
Yeah.
60 carbs a day, wrestling me an hour every night.
Unbelievable.
He would drink 3 Miller Lights and eat 3 chicken McNuggets. I would drink 12 to 15 Miller Lights. And even though I hated him, I would eat 20 McNuggets in a 300-mile drive.
So you don't hate Miller Lite. It's the chicken nuggets.
No, the McNuggets, yeah. But they were better than the hard-boiled eggs and the cheap...
Sure.
What are those things called that Macho Man was selling?
Oh, yeah, Slim Jim.
Slim Jim, uh-huh. Yeah. But that's what he ate. And we'd get to his house, he'd say, here, he hand me a bowl of Cool Whip. That was his way to go. I said, I can't live off Cool Whip. You got, of course, he
that was my dessert.
No, I know, but you had your rice all prepared. I mean, this guy had it laid out. He was way ahead of his time.
Right.
In weighing his meals, meal preparation. Like that's what my daughter Ashley does now. When she goes somewhere, Rick, she orders, you can order prepared meals, right?
Right.
And she has them delivered. She spends $500 sending prepared meals out on the road with her. I go, okay, honey, it sounds like a lot, but if that's what you want to do. But I mean, she looks like it too, so she'd been rewarded with that gift. But Rick was doing that back, wrestling me for an hour every night, which was not like we didn't do what they call rest holds. He went from 230 to what, 195 for the contest?
199.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Frank Zane, man, he was the king of, what'd you tell me all the time? He said, I might not be that big, but I've got, what's the word, not continuity.
Pleasing to the eye.
No. There's a word, though, for bodybuilders when everything is, I've got symmetry, Nate. Symmetry. Yeah. He was Frank Zane before Frank Zane, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah, true story. And he won the contest. And Snuka was, looked like a million bucks, but Rick, his calves, I mean, everything was just symmetrical, no steroids, clean, and still bench pressing 465 pounds.
Unbelievable.
That's a lot. Because we had some guys in the business back then that could jack some weight. I mean, both Bravo and Atlas could bench well over 500.
Right.
But I think they had a little help along the way.
Well.
Yeah,
they were. I spotted Atlas when he did 5 for 5.
Huh?
I spotted Atlas one time when he did 500 for 5 reps.
Yeah, well, that was on amino acids, right?
Yeah.
You're listening to Woo Nation right here on Play.
And just so you know, they could have given me anything and I couldn't bench 505. So taking nothing away from it.
Well, we talked a little bit about the Macho Man match at WrestleMania 3, and those are probably your two biggest opponents of the matches you hear the most about. Isn't that right, Ricky? I mean, when you talk about Macho Man and Ric Flair, those are the two big opponents, right?
Without a doubt, everywhere I go, I'm doing appearances and stuff now while working for the company, and it's a flip of a coin when a fan comes up, which one they talk about. The matches that Rick and I had and the WrestleMania 3 with Savage. It's always those two.
Tell us about the differences in working with Randy Savage and working with Ric Flair.
Well, like I said, we in that Charlotte match with 4 or 5 seconds left on the clock, just going to the ring, and I only knew that when he felt it was right, he's just going to sweep my feet out and put his feet up in the second ropes, in the corner, and that was it. Nothing else was said. Nothing else. And Randy's match, from start to finish, was completely thought out, and talked out, and even, stepped through and all that. It was a completely different animal for me because I'm so used to just calling it in the ring, feeling this moment and that. But, Randy had it A through Z. And I will say with that match, what made it different, customarily, you'd have your shine in the beginning for the babyface, and maybe babyface get a false finish or two. Then you segue into your heat section. And the heel would get a number of his false finishes in, and then you go to the comeback, and babyface has a couple false finishes during that comeback, and then you have the finish, you know, whoever was going over. So, you know, blueprint match, you know, eight or nine, you know, false finishes in the course of a standard match. We had 22 false finishes in that match. And to remember 22 false finishes, you know, that was that's the part that stressed me out. I was so happy that when that match was over, just because we got all the 22 false finishes in. You know, and it's sort of, I think from that point on, everybody started taking notice about how different that was because of all that false finish. And my only, when Randy and I started that thing, I said, I think the biggest thing is let's focus on the championship. And that would be, you know, you trying to beat me to stop me from getting it and me trying to beat you and get it. And that's what just started coming up with false finish after false finish.
Yeah, how long was that match?
Less than 17 minutes.
Wow, that's a lot of false finishes.
Yeah, we were false.
I could have never done that.
Yeah, it seemed every 45 seconds we're false finishing one another.
Yeah, I was just taking my first face bump at 17 minutes. and having you press slam me. I hadn't even taken over on you at that point yet.
Yeah. And press slam you, boom, and the next thing would be chop off the top, boom, yeah, be covered, kick out, grab a hold.
Yeah, it was the best.
God. So, Ricky, last year I
remember when you started doing the upside-down thing in the turnbuckle.
Yeah, and you chopped me running down it.
Yeah. And that the chop, you didn't know it was coming. That was right out of the blue. I just said, wow. That,
I know.
You know, what a moment this would be.
Yeah.
And you'd take the chop and throw your feet way up in the air and flip backwards and land on the floor. And it just, you know, if I was going to do a dive through the ropes on you as you started the feet up and saw me coming.
Yeah, because, you know, one thing that you and I did, I think we were the first ones to do it, maybe Harley did it with Dory, I don't remember, but you have to really trust your opponent to catch him in that crossbody
right.
And go over the rope backwards.
Yeah.
The guy you're catching, right, and I never caught Rick. Rick always caught me.
Right.
Because I just wasn't good at it like that. But, I mean, some guys can do it. I could dive on Rick, and trust me, I was not, you know, I wasn't Ed Roker Ponte. I couldn't even jump that high. But Rick knew I would take his head, we'd land.
Right.
But we started doing that, and nobody had done that I'd seen for a long time.
I had not seen anybody do that. We did that, I think, in our Chi-Town match in Chicago.
Yeah, for the first time, because
he does not
grab the rope at all. He's just trusting me to tuck his head in. And the momentum takes us over. He doesn't touch the rope at all. Then he lands on top
everybody
of me or next to me.
Does this deal and hooks.
Yeah, everybody else hooks it when you're doing it like that. But he was holding my body and trusted me to take him over. Nobody was doing it at that point. So
it was. I was selling up. My back would be close to the ropes. You take off and here you come charging, hit me with a crossbody, and we're just freewheeling it. We're both going over the top, not grabbing nothing. We're just freewheeling it.
Yeah, I mean it was. You know, it's so easy with him and Marie in the ring. You know, and I said this about you the other day, Rick. I was telling somebody that, you know, if it had been something to do, that Ricky Steamboat would have done a moonsault.
Sure.
Okay. If someone had said, Ricky, do a moonsault on the announcer table, people weren't doing that.
Right.
But it's not that Ricky Steamboat couldn't do it. He had no reason to. If somebody had started doing it, certainly Rick could do anything. He was that kind of an athlete.
Right.
But it wasn't called for then. And what we did, it was so different, as we set a pace that nobody could keep up with. I mean, we didn't, you know, we never sat in a hold. We didn't have to because the people didn't sit down.
And, you know, our challenges on cardio.
Yeah.
Even though that it was never said between you and I, but I knew that there was always an underlining challenge in our matches of who could blow who up.
Yeah.
it was. It, although the verbiage was never translated back and forth between him and I. And even the challenge would go into the weight room because that's when the Stairmaster was popular. And we'd be side by side.
Yeah.
And we'd crank it up to 20 and go for 30 minutes on the Stairmaster, you know, just like crazy.
Yeah, I know. The difference is you slept at night periodically. I could never get Ricky Steamboat to hang out. Isn't that funny? He and Sting found ways to avoid me at all times.
We had those three situations at 2001 Club, and I learned then. I said, you know,
we had spouses with us then. I'm talking about when we're on the road. You would never. Ricky Steamboat was not a party guy, and I'll tell anybody that forever. He was never out doing what I was doing, okay, and I was just, you know, drinking and saying hi to pay my respect to the people that bought tickets.
Right,
that's just part of the job. But Rick was never.
That was your image.
Yeah, the only time I could get Steamboat to drink a lot was when we were in Europe. I'll never forget the trip with you and I and Sting when, because you know Rick Steamboat is a speed freak, right? And he can build cars and he can build boats and he's multi-talented, right? I mean, I've got to pay people to do all of the above. And we rented a 735 BMW, and Ricky was driving at 160 miles an hour on the Autobahn. You and I and Sting, remember that?
Oh, yeah. The damn thing started to overheat.
Yeah. But when I got him overseas, he had a beverage, but that was about it. Oh, man.
Do you remember the last night in Berlin?
Yeah. The best was... The best was our flight back, you and I in the stanza, when we got so drunk. I got off the plane and left three robes, remember? I left three robes that I carried on. By the time I got back through customs, they were long gone.
Wow.
I said, thanks, that Rick.
That night in Berlin, we were drinking beer and shots of schnapps, in which I knew the schnapps was going to kill me. About four or five of us guys, we ended up splitting into two Volkswagen taxi cabs. I don't remember whose lap I was sitting on in the front seat, but I puked in the guy's Volkswagen glove box.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Not cool. And then we got on the plane together flying home, and we just said, let's just do it, man. Versus 7.5 or 8 hours, we just poured them in. We got them.
You see, you were conditioned for it. I wasn't, it was always bad for me.
No, I know. And you, even if you drank, you only drank beer.
Yeah.
So, you know, whoever got it.
Yeah.
But you can only drink so much beer in a 9.5 hour run. You got to have something else,
sure,
right?
Sure. Well,
so, and then another great time. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Two hours in, I'd look at you, and you look at me, and you know what kind of state I was in, and there'd be that Ric Flair laugh.
Yeah. Hey, I got to say one thing, and before I let you go, and I got to run too. We got to wrap this one. But Rick, I will tell you one thing. And one of my proudest moments is they made the mistake in Japan of putting Ricky Steamboat and I on before the main event in Tokyo, and that be the proudest moment of my life, because when he and I got out of the ring, they didn't think that two Americans would mean anything.
Sure.
They put us on in Tokyo. We were on a whole tour together for about 2 or 3 weeks. And
And
I was NWA champion. And
was
I wrestled
New Japan?
No, this was Baba.
Okay.
All Japan. Yeah. We were there for Baba. And they put me and him on in the semi-main event. And they might as well have just closed the doors when we left the ring. Because that was Jumbo Tsuruta and somebody against da-da-da-da. Forget it. Not even close. They forgot that he does look a little Japanese. Are you kidding me? And
hey,
they were dying,
hey, I got
man.
Hey, Rico.
Huh?
Do you ever get any artwork from Tony Atlas?
I have not.
Well, you know, he's a great artist, and he does everything by pencil.
I didn't know that.
Yes. And he doesn't do pencil with lines. He does, everything is done with a dot.
Really?
Like you take a pencil, and if you put on a clean piece of paper and put a dot on it, that's how he starts.
Wow.
And I'm sitting right here talking to you, and you mentioned the match that you and I had in Japan, and I'm looking at what I have hanging on my wall. It is about a 14 by 28 poster signed by Tony that is done with dots, and it's a picture of you and I in the middle of the ring, fighting for a top wrist lock, and the fans in the background have all got slanted eyes.
Wow. Wow.
It's a shot of you and I in that match that you just talked about.
Yeah.
In Japan.
Yeah.
And I've got it hanging on my wall.
Yeah. Well, they gave you and I those plaques, remember, afterwards?
Yeah.
They gave us these beautiful plaques, but I mean, when I heard that we were going on, when I heard that they didn't think we were could hold our own at an old gig. You haven't currently got cable TV over here. See you when I see you guys. Hey, man, Rick, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And I like to say it with you present, because I said this on a number of radio shows. So when I got to the Carolinas, Flair taught me everything that I learned. He taught me about timing. He taught me when to fight back. He taught me how to work. So, you know, I don't think I would have nearly had the leaps and bounds and the levels of expertise that I had after working with you for all those years that you were my teacher.
Well, I think we learned from each other. And unfortunately, it made a lot of other people miserable. That's my take on it, because I learned a lot from you, too, my friend. God bless you. I think the world of you, Rick. And our friendship means the world to me. Stay close, okay? Stay healthy.
Okay, buddy.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you so much, sir. Yeah. So, all right, man. Yeah, that was a great interview. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Everybody talks about the 1989 matches, and you guys got to kind of reminisce. And it's easy to tell how close you guys still are all these years later.
I think the world of him, you know. And on the money, he's just one of those guys that's just too good to be true.
And how cool is it right there at the end? He kind of gave you the kudos and said you were his teacher. And then ultimately, you were the guy he beat for the first world title. I mean, really cool history between the two of you.
I wish I could tell you I was his teacher. We learned together, because I'd never wrestled anybody that could move around like that. I learned from Wahoo McDaniels, who was ultimately my teacher. Even though I was in love with Dusty, I working with Wahoo, I learned how to work, you know, more so than learning with Dusty. A little more entertainment value than I learned from Dusty, but working at a pace and with a guy as technically gifted as Steamboat really helped, you know, put me on the map as well.
Why do you think his legacy isn't bigger than what it is? When you think about guys like yourself and Shawn Michaels, you're always at the top of the list. All the pros put Ricky right there on the list too, but in the eyes of a lot of fans, maybe he's not as high. Is that because he didn't spend as much time with Vince? Or
I think it's that, and he also wasn't with Vince when as a company. I mean, if you really look at my career, it got bigger in 2001.
Right.
I mean, in wrestling, in people that follow the sport and wrestling minds like yourself or Dave Meltzer or Jim Ross, my best years were my 80s.
Right.
But the 90s and 2001 and 2008 are the years they're going to talk about the most.
Because the world changed.
And Rick was gone, yeah. See, Rick said he was in the business 20 years.
Right.
I've been in the business 42 years.
Right.
It's a big difference, and I'm only 5 years older than he is. So that's what you can't duplicate television time.
Right.
So God gave me a gift, and one of the gifts was getting to work with him.
Well, and listening to you guys was a gift for every wrestling fan. This was probably the best edition, in my opinion, of Woo Nation we've had so far, and I'm pumped about next week.
I am too, young man. Thank you. Thanks for joining us. It's Woo Nation with Conrad Thompson and the Nature Boy. Over and out. Woo!